Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. Today I have Greg Shackles. Greg is a principal engineer at Olo. He's also a Xamarin MVP, a Microsoft MVP, and he hosts the Gone Mobile podcast. And if you're not subscribed to Gone Mobile, then put this on pause and go subscribe right now. He's the organizer of the New York City Mobile .NET Developers Group, and he is a leading light in the mobile world. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Jesse.
Well, I'm really glad to have you. I think it's have you back, right? Weren't you on a while ago?
Yeah, I came on a while ago with my co-host of the podcast you just mentioned.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I want to talk to you about all things Xamarin, but before I do, tell me about Olo. What does Olo do?
So at a high level, Olo is a white label online ordering provider for restaurant chains. And what that actually translates to is a few different things. So on the back end, there is a whole side of infrastructure side of things where we handle payment transactions and there's ordering engines and we handle point of sale integrations and all that sort of stuff. But then where the user interaction comes into play is we basically offer a white label solution for desktop web, mobile web, and then mobile apps. And that's the stuff that we'll start digging into more in a little while. But in a nutshell, we provide a white label experience. So when users are browsing the website or using the app, it's a fully branded experience. So our brand actually fades into the background and we use all the branding and colors and images and that sort of thing from each of our clients because we're dealing with bigger restaurant chains, brands like maybe Five Guys or Wingstop and that sort of thing.
And the application that you're working with, how long have you been doing that? How old an app is that?
So Olo as a company is a little over 10 years old now. So the company is very, very mature and we've been kind of the leader in this space for a while. I've been at Olo for a little over 4 years and our app platform, our apps in general are probably maybe about 5 years old, and our current app platform, and we could talk about the evolution there a little bit since I think it's an interesting story. The current app platform is about 2.5 years old, maybe going on 3 now.
So was there a switch over to Xamarin, or was it Xamarin all along?
Yeah, there was definitely a switch. So when I came into the company, there was an existing framework that had been built with a partner of ours, and it was built on another framework that's out there. So I kind of came in and inherited this, and we started working with it more and more, and we really wanted to build out our app experience and really enhance it and take it to the next level. And we were having a lot of problems, and it became prohibitively expensive to maintain that framework just in the way that we were forced to do things. So ultimately, we made the decision to start working from scratch on a brand new framework built completely on top of Xamarin. And obviously, I have my own biases towards Xamarin and years of experience with Xamarin leading up to that decision. So it was kind of a no-brainer from our perspective.
So when did you introduce Xamarin into the product and how pervasive is it? Is it used throughout the entire product?
It is. So basically it started as a, you know, like most things do, a little bit of a nights and weekend project for me. So, you know, just kind of the exploratory phase of what would an Olo framework look like on top of Xamarin. And it was a little bit different than the kind of thing I'm used to building, at least in the apps that I've built before, because you start thinking about things a lot differently when you have to basically make everything white labelable and you have to be able to swap out languages, images and fonts and customize all sorts of things that the platform isn't necessarily making it easy for you to do. And going into it as well, I've historically always been really wary of large frameworks and a lot of like the big MVVM type frameworks out there that really, I'd always found them to be very intrusive and very opinionated and really like silo you into a certain way of doing things. So I initially steered really clear of that when I was architecting this. But eventually I also found myself writing a lot of pretty similar boilerplate code myself for handling things like navigation and event handling and, you know, basic models and view models and that sort of thing, which led me to eventually, you know, kind of give in on some of my suspicions there and try out a framework called MVVM Cross. And then after using that for a little while and getting over some of the initial learning curve with that, I kind of just went in whole hog. And I've since, for the last few, maybe 3 or 4 years now, or whenever it was that I had initially started this spike, I've been a pretty big proponent of MVVM Cross. So that's the real underlying framework behind our mobile apps now. But it's but to answer your initial question, it's a very long way to go for a simple answer there. But to answer that, like it's a completely completely rewritten from the ground up C# and Xamarin app stack that we have now.
Well, I want to go on and talk to you about a couple topics. You had indicated that testing is a significant part of building your project, and that's something I want to focus on. But before I do, let's talk a little bit about MVVM Cross. You can't talk about MVVM and Xamarin and not have two libraries at least come up, MVVM Cross and MVVM Lite. And I'm not asking you to compare them, but my impression, and this may be totally wrong, is that there's a steeper learning curve with MVVM Cross. So can you give me a sense of how long it takes to become competent in that?
Absolutely. And it's actually a question I get a lot. And actually, you know, the Xamarin has their Dev Days event that's kind of going around the country and I think even the world at this point, that just came through New York last weekend. And I had a whole bunch of people come up to me asking basically that exact question. And it's actually one that I'm probably going to have to start preparing myself to answer better because in the interest of full disclosure, I don't have a lot of personal experience with MVVM Lite, so I can't really speak a whole lot to anything specific there. But from what I gather, they take the Lite in the name to heart, and it's a lot more lightweight. It's supposedly like a little less intrusive. MVVM Cross is, I think, an awesome framework. At times, it's definitely suffered from one of the classic open source problems where there's just a ton of code and it's moving very quickly, but the documentation is kind of scarce. So for a long time, myself and a lot of other people in the community would try to put out a lot of blog posts and really try to help people get up to speed on the framework, because there's a lot of moving parts in a big framework like this. And it's also one where it comes with a lot of conventions and a lot of magic if you don't necessarily know what's happening. But most of that is also completely pluggable. So if you don't like a particular thing, then you can always swap it out. But discovering what you can swap and what pieces are doing what isn't necessarily completely discoverable. As far as how long it takes, it's kind of tough. I mean, the other piece of advice that I always give to people when approaching really any of this stuff is I've seen a lot of people trying to basically bite off the whole thing at once and say, well, I want to go from nothing, no mobile experience and no MVVM experience or anything to shipping an app. So they install Xamarin, they install one of these frameworks, and then you don't know what's really happening in that whole middle layer. And you've now added 10 or 15 layers of abstraction between you and the platform. So it gets very difficult to know. So I always suggest that people start with, you know, vanilla iOS or even vanilla Xamarin iOS, since you're not really abstracting the platform by using Xamarin, and vanilla Xamarin Android, and really learn at least the basics of what those platforms are doing and offering before you start layering in some of these bigger frameworks that are going to start adding more layers and complications to that.
Now, that's interesting. I want to come back to MVVM Cross, but as we go into a tangent from a tangent, you suggested that folks should start with Xamarin iOS and Xamarin Android. My suggestion these days would be that if you're new to this, that you start with Xamarin Forms, that's an easier on-ramp. And then once you're a little bit comfortable in Xamarin Forms, then turn to Xamarin Native, that is Xamarin iOS and Xamarin Android, so that you get that fuller understanding of what Xamarin Forms is doing. But you can get up and running with Xamarin Forms very, very quickly.
Yeah, you absolutely can. And to me, in some ways, it depends on what your end game is, right? Like, so if the app that you're ultimately looking to go for is one where Forms is a really good fit, then Forms is a great place to start. I definitely think that either way, eventually you need to, and before long, you need to get to the point where you're kind of learning what iOS is doing behind the scenes, even if you're using Forms, and what Android's doing behind the scenes, because like these abstractions only go so far, and you know, you're going to get hit with some platform idioms and platform quirks if you don't sort of see what the magic is behind the scenes. But for certain cases, I would definitely agree that Forms is the way to go. But it depends on where you're trying to end up.
Yes. All right. We're in violent agreement about that. So let's say you're a Xamarin programmer. You've been programming relatively small applications, either in Forms or in iOS or both for that matter, and you feel pretty comfortable with that, and you feel pretty comfortable with the MVVM pattern, although you haven't used any of the libraries. Now you've got a larger project to do, and you decide you're going to use MVVM Cross, and you're motivated. Is that something you can learn in a few days, a few weeks, or do you really need a few months to get comfortable with it?
I think you can really, you could really get up to speed. And like you said, if you're coming in with, you know, how MVVM works, you know, the basic interfaces in .NET for doing MVVM, like iNotify property changed and collection changed and all of that sort of stuff, there's going to be a lot of concepts that are going to be familiar to you. And again, especially if you're, if you've used something like Prism or MVVM Lite or one of these other things on another platform, you're going to be familiar with model binding. You're going to be familiar with commanding and that sort of thing. And all of that still applies. So in MVVM Cross, they have their own kind of command. They have their own base view models. And then up at the view layer, in different ways, depending on what platform you're on, they offer data binding APIs and that sort of thing. So it's going to start to feel really familiar. So if you're coming in with experience, I think within a few weeks, you could definitely learn enough to be dangerous. It'll take you more than a few days generally just to see how all the pieces interact and where the kind of the main injection point are for you to start plugging in your behavior, but I think that if you're coming in with at least the basics there, then within a few weeks you should be pretty much rolling.
Well, sounds like an investment, but on the other hand, if you're getting data binding, that alone is going to enormously enhance your productivity.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the big benefits too. And there are lightweight ways to go about doing data binding if you want to kind of roll your own thing or use some sort of little micro framework or something. But it always depends on how complex your UIs are, but it's really, really easy for app UIs to become a mess of spaghetti code and state management and like these big state machines and if statements and event callbacks. And it gets really, really hard to manage. So when you can start teasing a lot of that out into view models and kind of swapping things in and out with data binding, just the maintenance side of it becomes so, so much easier.
Okay, one more question on MVVM Cross. Does it support things like dependency injection and act as an IOC, or is it really essentially an MVVM framework and nothing else?
So it basically offers all of that, and that's part of why it has a reputation for being pretty big. I'll also, just as a real quick side tangent to it being big, it's definitely worth noting that we haven't hit a whole lot of performance issues by using this. So that was my other, I mentioned earlier that I was very skeptical of frameworks like this for injecting that much magic into my apps. And, you know, any MVVM framework is going to start using reflection and all that sort of stuff that's known for not being very performant. But the reality of what we found is our apps are still extremely snappy. They're still very, very quick. So we haven't really paid a big penalty for going with something like data binding or anything like that.
That's great. All right, let me switch gears on you slightly.
Sure.
And talk about testing. And my experience with testing in the mobile community is that, let me say it this way, I used to work for a fellow who said that in theory and practice are the same, but in practice they never are. And that's my experience about testing in the mobile world, is that there's a lot of great ideas and a lot of commitment to unit testing, but not necessarily a lot of implementation.
Yeah, I think that's definitely right. And it's funny, I've sort of become known for being the testing guy, I think, in the Xamarin community and Xamarin circles over the last few years. Like at the first Evolve, I gave a talk on testing. And then last year, I came back to give a talk on continuous integration and continuous delivery, which ties into testing. But I've kind of just been pigeonholed into that. But I still talk about it constantly because I think it's super, super important. And the reason why, I'll start with the why and then get into kind of how we're using it in reality. But the reason why I think stability is so much more important on this than most other platforms is that like you really don't control the release pipeline between you and your user in the case of mobile apps. So if you have a bug that makes it out into your iOS app, you can't just pull that out of the store. You have to wait. You have to fix the bug, submit something to Apple, wait a few days if you're lucky, maybe a week to get that app out. And then you have to wait for the user to get that update. And in the meantime, there's a good chance they've already uninstalled your app or, you know, at best left you a scathing one-star review in the store or something like that. So the stakes are really high for bugs that actually make it out. So And then if you take a white label platform like ours, like at Olo, so you're multiplying that same code base by n number of clients in the store. So if we ship a bug in our core, so we have the shared core between iOS and Android, and if we ship a bug in that, that bug makes it into two platforms times every client that we have. So it's very, very costly. So we built out the shared portable class library that drives, that has all our view models and services and database access and network access. And basically as much as we can is in this shared library. And it's built out with, like, at this point, I think around 80 to 90% code coverage, because stability is just top, top priority there.
Now, are you doing unit testing as well? And are you doing test-driven development or unit testing after the development?
So, yeah, test-driven development's one of those tricky terms that I think everyone sort of defines differently. I would personally say that I adhere to test-driven development, but not in the sense that everything I do is writing a failing test first and then doing the thing and then making the test green. I'll bounce back and forth. To me, testing is a tool to help you. Sometimes it helps deliver software faster and get through features faster, because you could test things at a unit level instead of having to spin up a device or spin up an emulator and tap through six different screens to get to the thing you want. You can directly go at and test the thing you're looking for. So in that sense, I would say that I do test-driven development, but not everything is, you know, red, green, refactor.
Okay, fair enough. And on top of unit testing, of course, you're doing integration testing, and I assume you're doing some UI testing as well.
Yeah, and also just to add one more thing onto the unit testing thing as well. We're at Olo, we're using the XUnit testing framework, which is really, really, well, for one, it's a really awesome unit test framework for any .NET stuff that you might be doing. But one of the other really great things is that it has a good cross-platform story. So at this point, I think we're coming up on 600 unit tests or so for that core piece of our platform that I was talking about. And we can take every one of those 600 unit tests and run them both in just .NET, so say in our local test runner or on every check-in in our Team City environment. But we can also point them at an iOS device or an iOS simulator or an Android device or an Android emulator and make sure that all those tests pass on those environments as well, because they have a nice unit test runner that's built on Xamarin Forms, actually. So you can run it on iOS, Android, or Windows Phone.
Do you do your Xamarin development in Visual Studio or Xamarin Studio?
I get that question a lot. I tend to bounce around a lot personally, so it really depends. If I'm doing what I call the core development, so working in that portable class library and doing all of our non-UI work, I'm almost always in Visual Studio. And the biggest reason for that is just that I really, really like ReSharper's test runner. So I really like to work in that environment, and I'm a lot faster in that environment where I have that test runner to back me up. And at least to date, there's no real XUnit support in Xamarin Studio.
I think that's become a meme. Visual Studio versus Xamarin Studio, Visual Studio ReSharper. Those words come together in almost every discussion about Xamarin.
Yeah, and it's funny. Like, I'm a big ReSharper fan. I mean, I have it installed in all my Visual Studio instances, but I also... There's a lot that I don't necessarily miss when I'm in Xamarin Studio, and they continue to add there's a checkbox in Xamarin Studio called Enable Source Analysis that I'm not sure if it ships on by default now. I know for a while I was pestering them about it because I couldn't believe that they were still shipping it off by default. But I basically when I give talks, I refer to this checkbox as turning on ReSharper mode, because you'll basically get a lot of alt enter things and refactorings and sort usings and a lot of like the little shortcuts that you might be used to from ReSharper or even just Visual Studio vanilla right now. Xamarin Studio does have a lot of keyboard helpers there. So it's become pretty powerful and it's pretty quick. So when I'm doing a lot of times when I'm doing pure iOS or Android stuff, like, I just switch over to Xamarin Studio instead of having to deal with the build network lag and that sort of thing. But sometimes it just depends on which machine I need to be on or my mood that day.
Fair enough. And before we leave that topic, are your Visual Studio instances in a VM on your Mac, or are they on a separate Windows machine?
So all of my Macs do have VMs. I tend to use VMware Fusion to run all my Mac VMs. But at the office at work, my main machine is a PC, so I'm running Windows natively on that. Like we're a .NET stack and we're a Windows stack outside of the mobile stuff. So predominantly, because I do a lot of stuff at Olo that's not mobile as well. So predominantly, I'm working in a Windows environment there.
I'm sorry, I missed the last of that because I was deafened by the sound of all the Mac users turning off the podcast.
Well, then I guess they won't hear the fact that my main machine at home is an iMac and that's running Windows virtualized. But I got love for all of them.
One of the things that you mentioned before we started was automation. And I didn't get a chance to ask you what you meant by that, but what can you tell me about automation and your process?
Sure. So a lot of this goes back to the reason why I gave a talk last year at Evolve on continuous integration and all that sort of stuff. Because to me, it's kind of the next step from, you know, accepting testing into your life is accepting that things need to be automated and that your development machine shouldn't be the thing building the releases that are going to the store, and you need a nice reproducible build environment. So in a nutshell, what we have at Olo is a few different things. Like we were already using Team City for all of our build stuff. So our whole platform and deployments and stuff is kind of starts with Team City. So we hooked a Mac Mini into our Team City environment, and that became our iOS and Android build runner. So every check-in builds all of the apps that we have, make sure that they compile. We have one-click deploys from Team City to Hockey App if we want to deploy any of our brands to Hockey App for QA or internal testing or demoing to a client or something like that. So that's all automated as well. And we also, and most importantly, we automate through Team City. We have one-click builds to build the packages that you would upload to either the iTunes App Store or Google Play. So all of this is kind of housed and centralized in this very stable environment, which means that you're free to do whatever you want on your development environment. You could switch to the alpha channel if you want to try out new features and not worry about slipping some bugs you weren't expecting into the apps you're releasing. Because if you think about your app toolchain, it's not just the version of Xamarin that you have installed, but it's your iOS and Android SDKs and Java versions and macOS versions and all of that sort of stuff. So there's a lot of variables there. So controlling that becomes very, very important.
And did I hear you say, maybe I misunderstood, but did I hear you say that you've automated the deploy to Apple?
We're getting there. We have automated building that package. So basically when we run the package for App Store step in Team City, it'll publish it'll publish two artifacts. One of them is going to be the zip file that we would upload using the application loader tool that Apple gives you as part of Xcode. Mm-hmm. And the other is a text file that has basically a snapshot of every SDK version and everything. Basically, if you went to the About screen in Xamarin Studio and looked at all the versions of all the tooling, we take a snapshot of that, and then we include that in a release on GitHub, just so for each app that we release, we know exactly which versions of Xamarin and we're in it in case we have to go back and, you know, we see, oh, they fixed a bug in Xamarin, you know, X.Y, which apps have that version. And we're, to get back to your original question there, we're working towards more automation towards the submission part as well. For anyone who's interested in doing that, there's a really awesome, there's an awesome set of tools called Fastlane. So you go to fastlane.tools, I believe is the URL, but at the very least searching for it'll work. And it's a whole bunch of little tools written in Ruby that you can use to start uploading things to Apple. So you can use it to upload screenshots and metadata and create releases and create provisioning profiles and download provisioning profiles and that sort of thing. So we're starting to work that more and more into our process to automate more of that. Because as you can imagine, managing provisioning profiles for just one app is kind of a nightmare. So you multiply that by all the apps that we have to do, and it's a complete nightmare.
Absolutely. When I was putting up a couple applications on the store, I finally wrote down all the 110 steps that were necessary. And that's the number. I denoted 110 different things you had to do. It's truly astounding.
Yeah, it's a lot. Like, and we're not where I want to be just yet, but to me, the most important part was automating creating that package, because it takes all the mystery out of what you're actually shipping into the store. And then we can incrementally work on and filling in the gaps after that.
Great. Okay. Before I let you go, tell me about your podcast, Gone Mobile. Now, I just pitched heavily that folks should listen to it, and I've been listening to it for quite a while. But talk for a few minutes about what it is and where your focus is.
Sure. So Gone Mobile is a podcast that I run along with my buddy Jonathan Dick, who now works for Xamarin. But before that, he was also just a community guy like myself, one of the early authors of Xamarin books. So it's basically, I mean, in a nutshell, we're both super passionate about the mobile space and Xamarin. So the podcast definitely has a lean towards a lot of Xamarin type topics, but definitely not exclusive of other things. So I mentioned that Fastlane toolset before. A few months ago, we had the author of that come on the show, and we've had a few different like non-Xamarin ones as well. So we really just try to cover basically everything that's going on as quickly as we can. It's hard to keep up with publishing episodes and recording, which I'm sure you can relate to.
Oh no, but it's a piece of cake.
But we really just want to bring awesome people in and talk to them and let them talk about the stuff that they're doing. I mean, it was kind of born out of us realizing that we had, I mean, just because of what we're doing in the community, we had a lot of friends who were doing awesome stuff, and we have access to people that are doing awesome stuff and having conversations and learning interesting things as a result of that. And we really just wanted to start making some of those conversations public. And also, I just wanted to have those conversations with even people that I didn't know that are doing awesome stuff. So really, that's kind of the goal there. We're just trying to have, you know, shed some light on some of the really cool things that are going on out there and help give people a way to kind of keep up with it, and even give us a way to keep up with it.